Twitchell's Book 1, Dwindling Magic, written and read by T.D.L. White. Chapter 5, Network Discovery. Old buildings were not designed for computer networks. Even St. Mark's, which was less than 100 years old, had badly boxed-in cables running along most of its corridors. Twitchell's, well, at least the house part of Twitchell's, was so old it wasn't even designed for electricity or gas. Some of the light fixings looked like they were made to hold candles, or whatever people used for interior lighting 300 years ago. Light fittings were not what Nick was interested in. As he walked the corridors, he kept his eyes on the walls, looking for cables, ports, hardware, anything that could be used for data communication. The closest thing he found in the house was old, painted-over electrical cabling. And the college was worse. The walls, ceilings, and floor were immaculately clean and smooth and devoid of anything remotely network-like. His plan to find extra Wi-Fi had failed at the first hurdle. He ended up in Mr. Lee's geography room a few minutes early and a little disappointed. There was no sign of Mr. Lee, so Nick took the opportunity to snoop around the room. Nothing on the ceiling or floor or near the bookshelves. Mr. Lee's desk was a battered old thing that might have been an original piece of furniture from the house. No wires led to it or from it, and all there was behind it was a blackboard and a box of chalk. Nick sighed and sat down at the nearest desk. He took his gown and bag off and pulled out his laptop. He had just finished logging in when the door opened and Mr. Lee came in, with a coffee cup in one hand and a sheaf of papers in the other. He used a foot to push the door to.
"Ah, Nick. Glad you made it back. I heard that you got quite a few extra prep sessions booked with the other teachers, so I'll try to keep you on track."
His gaze fell on Nick's laptop, and he considered it for a moment. Nick found himself instinctively pulling the screen down a little. It was the single most expensive thing he'd ever owned, and it was fast, powerful, and beautiful. It was more expensive than anything his mum owned, too. Not that she knew anything about it.
"Nice piece of kit," he said.
Nick nodded.
"Strictly speaking, the zero-tolerance rule for electronic communication devices is for the school day, and since prep is technically our version of homework, I'm not sure I have the authority to enforce that rule now."
He perched on the edge of his desk and took a sip of coffee.
"But it's probably a good idea to leave the laptop in your room during the school day, as the caretaker has a fry first, ask questions later policy when it comes to illegal technology."
The caretaker?
Well, her role's the caretaker, but Barbara is more of an odd job come IT technician, really. And she's also in charge of lost property, roof maintenance, car parking permits, the school IT network, and confiscated items too. She's quite the authoritarian. I once parked with one wheel barely touching a white line, and she clamped me for a week.
"She in charge of Wi-Fi?" Nick asked.
"Yes, she's master of Wi-Fi too, so best to stay on her good side. You'll get used to leaving all your devices in the dorm, and it's not a bad thing. I keep my phone in the car. It's quite liberating in some ways."
Liberating isn't what Nick would call it, but that gave him another thought. "You must use computers for some school stuff," he said. "What about registers and student data?" At St. Mark's, all attendance was recorded on teacher laptops. If you were late even for one lesson, it got flagged and a message was sent home.
"Ah, it's all automated here. Twitchell's doesn't approve of computers for teaching or learning, but we do use them for all the boring admin stuff."
He put the papers down and held up his ID badge.
"These things are not just for opening doors. They record access to all areas of the college. Everywhere you go gets recorded in an electronic register somewhere."
Nick hadn't thought about how the ID badges worked. To give access around the school, they might be using some kind of network.
he looked at the door to the room. Across the top was a beefy magnetic lock. It probably read his badge with a proximity sensor, but maybe it was updated wirelessly. He glanced down at his laptop and hovered over the networking panel. No networks showed, so the door controls were probably wired. Like most of the rules here, it all takes a bit of getting used to. But like I said, in the end it's quite liberating. He picked up the papers he'd brought in with him. Let's get down to business. I've brought a selection of first, second and third year work to help you grasp the fundamentals of the topics we're covering this term. Over the next 20 minutes, Mr. Lee talked him through the work while a handful of other students wandered in and sat down to do their prep. When it was time to leave, Nick had a dozen new geography terms and concepts swimming through his mind. He put his laptop away and tried to remember the way to French. After a couple of wrong turns, he found the right corridor. Ugh, French. He hadn't paid any attention to learning languages since primary school. He trudged into the room. An hour and a half of prep later, he'd survived French, RE and biology. At Twitchell's, learning involved talking, reading, thinking, and lots of writing on paper. Nick's hand was aching and sore, and he'd only been there one day. Without enough time to go back to his room before dinner, Nick went straight to the dining hall. Margaret sat him at a table with a few other fourth years that he recognised from his maths class. There was no sign of Jenny, James, or Elf. Nick took his plate up to the counter and was rewarded with some kind of stew and dumplings, to which he added a portion of triple-cooked chips. The other students at his table chatted away about their first day, but this was the start of their fourth year at Twitchell's, and the conversation was peppered with a history that meant nothing to Nick. They politely tried to include him, but after a few nods and grunts and one-word answers, they left him alone, which was fine by Nick. Afters was either apple pie and custard or a fruit cocktail. Nick chose the pie, and despite his past experiences with custard, found himself going back for seconds. He made it back to the common room in the house with 20 minutes to spare before Wi-Fi was turned on. He quickly scoured the room for evidence of any networking and found nothing. The only visible wiring was for power sockets, the lights, and a big antique wooden clock mounted above the fireplace. The tea snacks had been taken away and replaced with hot drinks and biscuits. Nothing to do but pour himself a cup of tea, choose a comfy armchair, get his laptop and phone out, and get ready for action. As the antique clock's hands creaked their way round the fading face, the room started to fill up. Nick's attention was firmly on his laptop. Expensive as it was, it had more than paid for itself, and would keep on paying, just so long as he could get online for at least a few hours a day. 1 hour just wouldn't cut it. But he was confident that, with a bit of luck and some skill, he'd find a way to stay connected for as long as he needed. By 8 p.m. the common room was bustling. Almost 50 students had made their way in, most with phones out, some with laptops, and all of them eagerly waiting for data. Nick had queued up some tasks on his laptop, and had his phone at the ready when the door to the room opened and a wiry woman wearing jeans and a black polo shirt came in. She had a grey plastic device balanced in one hand and a couple of cables in the other. Everyone fell silent as the woman, presumably Barbara the caretaker, took the box to the snack table. He watched carefully as she bent down, opened a hatch in the skirting board that he'd completely missed earlier, and plugged the cables in. She stood up and surveyed the room hawkishly. After a few seconds, lights started flashing on the front of the grey box. There was a whirl of activity as phones lit up with calls and messages, and conversations sprung up with parents and loved ones. Nick checked his laptop and saw a new wireless network called House had appeared. He tried to connect and was confronted with a request for a password. Setting the laptop down to one side, he walked over to the caretaker. She saw him coming and angled herself in front of the grey box as if to protect it.
"That's close enough," she said sharply when he was still a couple of metres away. "Where's your badge? It should be on display at all times while in school."
Nick glanced at the other students and couldn't see another badge in sight. He pulled his out from his jacket pocket and let it dangle from the green lanyard. The woman snatched it from him and held it close to her face, scrutinising the details.
"Nick Thompson," she said, wrinkling her beak-like nose. "New boy. I was warned about you."
She looked from the badge to Nick and back again, as if committing his details to her memory for a future telling off. Nick stayed quiet and hoped that whatever she already knew about him was not the full story, or he might not be allowed access to the Wi-Fi at all. Eventually, she breathed out a sigh and gave the badge back.
"Do you know what the password is for the Wi-Fi network?" he asked innocently, while leaning slightly to one side to take a look at the grey box. He couldn't see a make or model number anywhere on it.
"Twitchell's. Capital T at the start, then all lowercase." She moved her body to block his view of the device, in case simply by looking at it he might cause it harm.
"Thanks."
He went back to the armchair and tapped the password into his phone. Messages started flooding in. He ignored them, balancing the phone on the arm of the chair and typing the password into his laptop. It connected and immediately started on the tasks that Nick had queued. He pulled up a diagnostic tool and checked the Wi-Fi connection. It was fast up and down, and the ping to the ISP was low. He noted the ISP details for later, then got down to business. He gave himself 5 full minutes to assess the situation before calling his mum and his granddad. Within seconds, his fingers were flying over the keyboard and he was lost in thought. Back in Luton, Nick lived in a small flat paid for by the council. It was just him and his mum, and she spent a lot of time out at work. She mostly had low-paid jobs, sometimes contract cleaning, sometimes in cafes and restaurants, at all hours of night and day. But however much she worked, there only ever seemed to be just enough money to get by. Nick had spent most of his childhood playing on his own, wearing second-hand clothes, eating cheap, smart-price supermarket food, and never going on any proper holidays. But after he started at secondary school, Nick made a discovery that changed his life. Not the kind of discovery that rocketed you into being rich and famous, but the kind that improved your life slowly, just a little bit at a time. When Nick finished primary school, most of the kids he knew got into the local grammar school, but Nick didn't, so he ended up at St. Mark's. With no one to hang out with at break and lunch, he found the best place to go was the school library. And in the library was a bank of computers that anyone could use. Nick had no idea about computers. He'd certainly never had one at home. But he soon found they had a few simple games installed. He played all the games until he was sick of them, and found that he couldn't get access to any more games as they were blocked by the school's network security. One thing that wasn't blocked was search engines. And through searching, Nick found out all about networks and firewalls and proxies and spoofing and all kinds of other useful terms that helped him get around the school rules. There was something about solving problems and outsmarting the adults at school that he loved. And before he knew it, he'd forgotten about the games he wanted to play and started his journey into sneaking around computers and networks. Or hacking. Only he hadn't thought of it as hacking. Not until Mr. Platts, the teacher in charge of IT, pulled him out of an English lesson just before the Christmas holidays and walked him to the head teacher's office for a meeting. Apparently, one of Nick's sneaks was actually a serious data breach of the student record system, which was close to being an actual crime. It was an uncomfortable meeting. The head had wanted him thrown out of school for inappropriate use of school equipment. But to Nick's surprise, Mr. Platts argued for Nick to stay, pointing out that it was better that a student had exposed the hole in their security and not an actual hacker who would have stolen the data. He made it sound like Nick had done St. Mark's a favour. so Nick got to stay. Just. After the grilling by the head, Mr. Platts had taken Nick through the process of how he'd been caught. Nick learned about log files and monitoring systems, and how all things that happened on a computer could be recorded. Mr. Platts also told him about people called penetration testers, whose job it was to look for holes in security and write reports on how they could be exploited to gain access to vulnerable systems. Nick also learned about people who got paid to find problems with software. They were the bug hunters, looking for badly coded interfaces or insecure communications and reporting them to the software companies. After that, Nick made sure he never got into trouble again. He still spent all of his breaks and lunches on the library computers, and he kept on learning about how to break into other networks and systems. But he also learned about penetration testing and bug finding. And most importantly, he learned how to avoid being caught by the school's logging and monitoring systems. He loved everything about looking for holes in security. It took him almost 6 months to find his first bug in the real world, an authentication flaw in a mobile app. But when he reported it to the software company that made the app, they didn't give him any money. They didn't even acknowledge him at all. They simply didn't want to know. Nick kept going, and by the end of year 7, he'd made his way into more networks and computers and found more and more bugs. He also found out that even if the software companies were not willing to pay him, there were other, less legitimate people that were. Bug hunting was one way he'd started to make money. Another came by way of a happy accident. In an IT lesson, he overheard some kids complaining that they wanted to play a game together online, but it cost too much to pay for a private server. After a bit of research, coupled with the fact that by now Nick had full control over all the computers at St. Mark's, he began running his own gaming servers and subletting them to the other kids at school. It was these gaming servers that Nick needed to check on before calling home. Online gaming was popular at St. Mark's, but often the most popular games charged a fee for hosting groups on their servers. Over a period of weeks, Nick had found out what the most popular games were and secretly installed them on computers throughout St. Mark's. He then made them available to his fellow students and charged each player a small amount per hour they logged on. And the best part was that because he ran the servers on school equipment, it didn't cost him a penny. Plus, his servers were safer than random internet ones. He only allowed access to current school kids, and sometimes their brothers and sisters. Of course, nobody else knew he was using the school computers for this, and he'd made sure that it was nearly impossible to find out. So, as soon as his laptop had connected to the Twitchell's network, Nick did two things. Firstly, he started to run an update on one of the more popular games. He had to keep his customers happy after all. Secondly, he downloaded the logs from across all the servers to make sure that the user accounts were billed for their playing time. One big issue with being at Twitchell's was he couldn't collect money. Every Friday, a stream of gamers would find him during lunch to hand over some of their pocket money to pay for their server time. A few of them had started getting their own bank cards and paid him online, but most of the kids didn't have cards, which was one of the reasons he needed to leave Twitchell's and get back home. Missing a week's worth of payments this Friday wouldn't be that bad, as long as he could simply collect double the week after. Unfortunately for Nick, all his thoughts about how to collect payments vanished as the first gaming server log file opened. It showed almost no activity for Monday, when usually a dozen or more students would have been playing. Concerned, he pulled up another file, and his phone started buzzing. He checked the screen. "Not now, Mum," he said under his breath, reading through the next file. Same problem. No activity. That meant no money for him. He opened up another file while picking his phone up and answering it. "Hey, lovely," his mum's voice came through bright and cheery. "I miss you. How's things going?" Nick scanned through the next file and let out a long sigh before answering. "Fine," he said. "It's all fine." But it wasn't all fine. Somehow, in the last 24 hours, something had gone very wrong with his gaming servers. He needed to find out how bad the problem was, and come up with a fix. And because of Twitchell's stupid rules, he now had less than an hour to do it. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.